Hounded by police for years. But in recent months, after a series of incidents in which black men lost their lives due to what appear to be overreactions by police, the whispering has stopped, replaced by an outcry to change police behavior. And now, in Charlotte and in communities around the country, police are joining in on the discussion of how they operate, how certain behaviors can trigger violence, and how both police and citizens need to approach one another. In the Queen City, CMPD Chief Rodney Monroe has embarked on a series of community forums, the purpose of which is to get both sides talking to each other. Police want to hear citizen complaints, and citizens want to know they've been heard. Police also want us to know what they face on the job every day. So what are police hearing from citizens? What are they learning about their own behavior? And what are citizens learning about how police are likely to react in the face of danger? To talk about that and more, we've invited CMPD Detective Chief, Gary McFadden to join us. Detective McFadden works in the office of the Chief of Police. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Kirsten Sickley is the CEO of the YWCA of Charlotte, and this month they are hosting their annual Stand Against Racism series of events, among which will be a forum with Police Chief Rodney Monroe on April 23rd. We have information about that on our website at WFAE.org. Welcome back to you. Oh, wait a minute. Are you there?
I am.
Okay. I could not hear you when you spoke. It was a very odd thing. Well, nice to have you. And M. Quentin Williams is back with us. He recently conducted his Dedication to Community, or D2C, tour at UNC Charlotte just last week, as a matter of fact. In addition to being the founder and CEO of that forum, he's an attorney, speaker, former FBI agent and federal prosecutor, and author of the recently published survival guide, How Not to Get Killed by the Police, Part 1. That's provocative. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk about that book as we go through the program. Detective, first let me get your reaction to what's been going on around the country. We have all of these incidences from New York to Ferguson to Cleveland, Ohio, to out in California, San Bernardino, California. And just yesterday, an adjunct or retired or reserve a sheriff's officer in, I think, Tulsa, was accused of manslaughter because he shot a black man fleeing the scene with what he thought was his taser, but in fact turned out to be a pistol. What's your reaction to all of this? It seems like not a day goes by that we don't hear something like this.
Well, it is not at this time, and it is a tragedy. It hits close to home. North Charleston is close to home. I know the family, went to school with one of the brothers.
Really?
We have been on the phone every other day talking. So that's a little bit closer to home. But these things happen.
They seem to be happening all the time.
Well, I think they happen now, but everybody finds it trending now.
Okay.
So we are believing that we should talk about it more now.
So have they been happening in the past and they haven't made the news for some reason? They haven't made the national news? Was it Ferguson that focused the national news attention on this topic, and therefore now they're looking for everything under every rock and we're seeing it?
Well, yes. And, you know, media plays a big part. I can remember being in New York at my aunt's house watching the Rodney King incident. Incident went away. It came. But we as the public never really had that conversation or never really address it.
You are a police officer, have been a police officer for years. You're also an African-American.
Yes.
Does this just tick you off?
At some points it does. But what ticks me off more is that we sit back and point fingers and blame. Conversation that we are having now should have been had 20 years ago. Should have happened after every incident. But we sit back and we coin phrases like Black Life Matters, and we run with that. I think that we need to have more of these conversations, but these conversations should have education. You know, why Darren Wilson was not indicted? Can we sit down and have that conversation and see where we can better ourselves later if these incidents come up again? Tulsa is absolutely a tragedy for that family.
Mm-hmm. How often does this happen in Charlotte? How often have these incidences taken place, but we've simply not heard about them?
No, we hear about all of our incidences here in Charlotte where a police officer is involved in a deadly shooting. So we hear about it here. There are investigated here. They are scrutinized by the public here. But what do we really do after that?
Have we had any incidences that are comparable to what happened in Ferguson or in North Charleston or elsewhere where it seems not only are African-American men targeted, it seems that the police reaction to those men is unthinking and swift and sometimes brutally over the top?
Well, I think that we use the words target would be unfair. Because I think we fuel these things by using words like target. Okay. Do we target African-American men? I don't think we target them. Are they traveling? They are in incident situations more than some people? I don't know. These are things that we have to look at. If you are a white officer driving down certain sections of the city or patrolling certain sections of the city, and your population is 90% African-American, you're going to stop 50 to 60% of that. We have to look at that.
But if you're a black officer and you're patrolling Myers Park or Ballantyne, you're not going to stop a bunch of white people. Are you?
I think we should, and I think that we do. We have to because
when we pull somebody over in Ballantyne or Myers Park or Southeast Charlotte someplace, do we ask if it's okay to search their car normally?
Would I? I have.
You have?
When I was a patrol officer, yes, I have.
So what's the difference? Is there a difference?
Perception, the way that we create this conversation, how we use keywords to make it look different. Incidents happen in these cities, Myers Park, and incidents sometimes are covered up by monetary money. You know, incidents happen where kids get hurt or kids are violent, but then somebody, the father has the means to pay the money off not to bring that to court to the family. So we don't see all of these incidents that we...
So given that, if we knew there was a balance to the scale, it might soften the blow in the African-American community, but we don't see the balance because money talks?
Well, we don't have that real conversation. Does domestic violence happen at Lake Norman? Yes. Is it reported? No. Does domestic violence happen in Myers Park? Yes. Do we report it? No.
What about police action in Myers Park versus police action in West Charlotte? Is that reported?
Yes, it is reported. If an incident happens in Myers Park, it's reported. Here's the difference in the African-American community. Most of the times when an incident happens, they are talked out of reporting it because they are told by so-called leaders of the African-American community, well, the police is not going to do anything. It's no need to report it. This is something that is heard through generations. I stand to argue with them to say, report it. That's what we're asking. If it happens, report it. If you're being mistreated, report it. So we can see the pattern, so we can take care of the pattern.
There was a survey, I've forgotten who took it, I think a Chapel Hill organization took it, of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department and their interaction with citizens that reports it is younger black males ages 16 to 30 who draw the most attention from CMPD. They are almost three times as likely to be searched by the average driver. Is there a reason for that?
I would want to jump in to say, as a citizen attending the Cops and Barbers session on Sunday, mm-hmm. one of the biggest takeaways for me that piggybacks right on that statistic that you just read, Mike, is that that group of men, young African-American men, who are profiled, if you will, are the least reporting group. And so they are not reporting on grievances. And I heard the chief say loud and clear on Sunday, those have to be reported. It's just like a situation with an employer and employees. If you have a bad apple in the bunch, you've got to have some people telling the supervisor what's going on.
Okay, so why are these people being pulled over more often or searched more often than the average driver, the 16 to 30-year-old African-American males?
Well, one thing that you said, they may draw attention to themselves.
In what way?
And we can be honest. We have to be honest about a lot of things. And I think if we be honest about a lot of things, then we can take care of that. if there are, not saying that they do, but the question to pose that, what brings our attention? The attention that you said draw the attention to themselves. If you draw the attention to themselves, do they know how to handle that situation? I think that's when that's what these open forums and the book should be about. How do you take care of yourself in that situation?
I want to come back to this, how they draw attention to themselves. But as Kirsten pointed out, Chief Rodney Moreau pointed out on Sunday, I think it was, that this is the age group that does not complain about their treatment at the hands of police. And you're saying you'd like them to?
Yes.
Why don't they?
Because they have been generationally told the police is not going to do anything.
But are they intimidated? Are they afraid to? Do they think it's not going to do any good because they've been told that it won't do any good, or because they don't know how to file a complaint, or they're afraid it's what's going to happen as a result of filing a complaint, that they'll be targeted even more because they feel now that they're a target?
I think it's all of the above. Because if we at this forum that we didn't join this conversation, we created this conversation of cops and barbers, hands up, what now? We created that. Mm-hmm. So we are inviting these young men to come in. We're going out into community, bringing them in. Nobody said, just come to this forum.
This has been done in other cities, and I heard an interview with Alec Baldwin, and I think it was the chief of police or a head guy somewhere in Philadelphia or New York, where they've actually called in gang leaders, and they've called in repeat offenders, and they've called in people who feel that they have been targeted, and they have a one-on-one, honest conversation with them, and it's completely diffused the situation because the people who are normally considered to be potential perpetrators or actual perpetrators then understand what the police face when they go out in the field, and the police begin to see these people as individuals with lives beyond whatever crime they may or may not commit, and they set up a relationship, and it works.
It should. The problem that we have, I believe, in most of these forums, that the people who need to be at the forum, we're speaking for young African-American males, and they're not at the forum. Mm-hmm. And what I say candidly is that if you come, bring someone. But then we have, and not to step on anybody's toes, that if we have the pastors who attend these events, bring and ask their congregation to come, it'll be a better result. Take away the so-called city leaders at the head of the table. Put the kids at the head of the table and have them to speak and find out what they really feel about it. Speak for them. We're speaking for them.
Has this happened anywhere, any of these forums?
That is what's happening at our forums. Our forums are young African-American men who we find in the community from the barbers or from the law enforcement standpoint. We take them out to dinner 1 week prior to this event. Mm-hmm. I have attended each one. Each one has been fabulous. We connect. We talk. Not the city officials talk for these people, not somebody else. We talk. We, law enforcement community, are having this conflict with African-American males. So why can't we talk?
Right.
And that's what we're doing.
That's Detective Gary McFadden from the Office of the Chief of Police at CMPD. I also have two other guests. You heard from Kirsten Sickley a moment ago from the YWCA, and Quentin Williams is also with us, and he's written this book that I want to get into in the next segment, How Not to Get Killed by the Police, Part 1. It's a cliffhanger.
There you go.
We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Myers Park Baptist Church, welcoming Duke Divinity School professor and noted biblical scholar Dr. Ellen Davis, April 17th through 19th, for a workshop on creation care, our divine calling. Details at mpbconline.org. And Tyndall Subaru, Gastonia, collecting unwanted electronics for recycling in April at Tyndall Subaru. The planet will thank you. Details at tyndallsubaru.com. Again this year, the legislative session has been a busy one. Lawmakers tackling sales tax redistribution, religious freedom proposals, economic development. And then there's the ongoing power struggle between the Senate Republicans and Governor McCrory, also a Republican. So we're going to sit down with a group of reporters who cover state politics to talk about where these issues stand, what passage may mean to us, and look ahead to what other things legislators might be considering tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Turkey expresses outrage after Pope Francis accused the nation of committing the first genocide of the 20th century in the deaths of more than a million Armenians. A new chapter in the century-old debate.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Detective Gary McFadden from the Office of the Chief of Police, Kirsten Sickley, CEO of the YWCA, and Quentin Williams, Chairman and CEO of Butler Lappert Williams, and also the author of How Not to Get Killed by the Police. People may be wondering why the YWCA is sitting at the table. What have they got to do with all of this? Tell us.
They can wonder no more. The YWCA's commitment to racial justice is one of the threads that unites YWCAs across the country.
It goes back to the 1800s.
Yep. And it's the first part of our mission, eliminating racism, empowering women, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all people.
That's so, news to me. You've been around a long time, and that's news to me.
Well, I haven't been around
but
a long time.
Well, no, you know what I'm saying. The YWCA has been around a long time, and that's news to me. Do you think most people know that's your core mission?
That is a story that we tell and make sure that people do know. I think you're right. A lot of people are not familiar with that. One of the ways we've been more overt about that in recent years is to host community forums and dialogues at the YWCA and elsewhere, like the one we'll be hosting next Thursday on the 23rd with Chief Rodney Monroe, that will be similar to the Cops and Barbers event, where the simulator, the firearm training simulator, will be shown in that community for the first time. And people will get to see what it's like to be a police officer making a split-second decision.
So this is one of those simulators that you are standing there with a pistol, and
right.
a potential perpetrator pops up on a screen in front of you, and you have to make a split-second decision whether or not to fire your weapon. Is that right?
And I watched it happen on Sunday at the Cops and Barbers event at Martin Luther King Jr. Middle School, and it was powerful to see average citizens just be devastated by making errors in their judgment. And realizing, you know, in that moment, these are the kinds of things that officers deal with all the time.
I have two police officers here. Well, one's a former FBI agent and one's a police officer. Today, are these simulators, which I'm sure both of you have used, are they accurate? Do they give you a potential officer or a real officer the real feel of what it's like to make that decision? Quentin.
I believe they are very helpful. There's nothing that can replace being out on the street and having it happen. Experience is the best way, of course. But in training, you look for the replication of real-life standards, and these simulators are probably the best training method that you have.
For those who listen every day, you will recognize Quentin from having been here last week as part of the dedication to community tour at UNC Charlotte. And one of the things we talked about when you were here, it was that you come from a background that was rather rough. You were one of those people, or hung around with people who were either dead or in prison, many of them. And you went on to be in law enforcement, in the FBI, and work undercover for the FBI among the very people that you came from, drug dealers and the like, in a dangerous situation. What's that like?
It's a surreal experience when you, after a while, you become used to it slightly. But the first time being undercover was a surreal experience because I was sitting across the table from somebody who was like me as a child. Somebody who was like the kids on my block as a child, when I was a child. And being in that situation, it brought to the forefront just how delicate life is. Because but for a few people in my life, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, since you've been on both sides of the fence, and this really is a situation where we have this Berlin Wall between the police and the community in some cities, not necessarily here, but that's what led to Ferguson, that's what led to some of these other incidences. What doesn't each side know about the other?
Here's what's important. This should be a we mentality. We are in an us against them mentality. And this isn't the fault of the police. This isn't the fault of the public. This is kind of what has evolved because of the history of our country. We are the kids that we were talking about, Detective McFadden was talking about, who might not have trust for authority, there are two reasons for that. One is based on their experience. Either they've had an experience that has in some way deflated their trust, or reputation. It's been passed down through the generations not to trust law enforcement, or both. So because of those either experiential issues or the reputation issues, the people who are being approached by police officers have a very lower level of trust for law enforcement.
Does that also translate to a lower level of respect?
Oh, yes. Believe me, if you don't have somebody's, if you don't trust somebody, you don't respect them. Mm-hmm. And I think what needs to be done in the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department is doing that with these forums is they're creating a dialogue. It's a part of community policing. I always say that there are three elements to regaining this we mentality or to gaining this we mentality: the selection of officers, the training, education of these officers, and then the methodologies for policing. And those methodologies have got to include community policing. And you have to have all three. Two of them without one of them will be a failure. So what the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department is doing by having these forums is great because it's a part of the community policing aspect. It's bringing people who were notoriously them into the same forum with us so that it can be we.
We talked about respect and that lack of trust leads to a lack of respect on the part of citizens for police. What about police for citizens? Because one of the complaints, and you can see this, for instance, and this was a white guy in San Bernardino who fell off. The police were chasing him. He was on horseback. He finally fell off the horse. They surrounded him. He was on his stomach. He wasn't going anywhere, and they kicked the heck out of him. That's a lack of respect on the part of the officers for the guy. They got him. All they had to do was cuff him. So what about respect on the part of the police, the attitude that they put out there as they pull somebody over in a car or they have to arrest them for whatever reason? Is that addressed at the police level?
Yes, that is a critical point. We try to show where our attitudes also is important. When people say take sensitivity training, they need more training, then we need more training, we have training. We take the sensitivity training. But I think that showing them what we go through, is it going to be enough? I don't think no matter what we do, it will be enough.
Well, when you see an incident like San Bernardino, and I think all the officers involved were white in that incident.
Correct.
And so was the guy they apprehended. Is it simply a matter of to do their job and to go into a chase situation with a guy you don't know? He could be armed. He could be dangerous. He may not be. You don't know. But he's certainly running from you. And you get him. Is your adrenaline at such a level that it's almost impossible to bring it down? Is that what leads to incidences like kicking the suspect, like what happened in New York City with the guy who said, I can't breathe? They could have left him alone.
The incident with the horseback, I think that's just adrenaline and stupidity.
But how do you control that? You have to control that.
Well, can you control that?
Isn't that part of your training?
Yes, it's part of our training. I think we're doing a lot of training in de-escalation of the event. But what we have to also say which I wish, and this is personal, that we can have all the training, but we need somebody else to be training also to say, okay, if I come down and you're still going up, that is an issue. I want us to address the whole problem and not just say, well, the officers have went through 10,000 hours of training on de-escalation, but the community is still in the same state that it is in when we went to training. I think these forums are going to bring us closer together, and that's what I want to say. We have training. We're going to train, but we need you to kind of meet us just a little halfway, I believe, because we can have the training, and it's hard. I can tell you, being on the streets and have worked the streets back in the 80s, which is a long time, 80s and 90s, you get your adrenaline up. But I, like I told people, I'm not going to beat you. I'm not going to kick you. We're going to fight for my gun. We're going to fight for my baton. But then at the end of the day, I still have to be in that same community.
It's a dangerous job, being a police officer. No question, because you never know from day to day, moment to moment, what you're going to confront. So I don't want to minimize that in any way, and I don't know how I would react in that situation either, quite honestly. No matter how much training you have, you don't know how you're going to react because you don't know what you're going to face. But what kind of person goes into that line of work? Because what's the profile of a person who would put themselves in the line of fire, in harm's way, potentially every day? And how do you steel yourself against that?
Well, it is hard. A lot of people love law enforcement. A lot of people come in law enforcement for the wrong reasons. We try to weed those people out. A lot of people have hidden agendas. We all have hidden agendas. It is like the lady says, I can say the N-word, but I have black friends. With some of the incidents that we've had at CMPD, it brings some of that out. You know, your true feelings of how your thoughts are. There are many things against a lot of things that we do good at the police department, and those bring some of the people out of the surface.
I want to be careful that people understand that what I'm about to say is not in any way giving the police a pass on what has happened in the incidences that we have seen on television recently because of the existence of video and these arrests and these killings. But in almost every incident, the person being arrested had a record or was doing something or potentially doing something that was illegal. In the latest incident in Tulsa, there was video of the guy making an illegal gun sale to an undercover officer before he was shot and killed, trying to get away from police who were coming to, I guess, surround him as a result of seeing that sale go down. So how do we expect the police to act in those situations where they're dealing with somebody they know is a criminal?
Well, I think that we as a community should address the entire incident, not just portions of the incident, and explain the entire incident. The incident with Michael Brown and started off as a larceny of the store.
That's Ferguson.
Ferguson. Mm-hmm. We never talked about the incident that created that conflict between Daryl and Michael. These are things that we have to talk about. If we, and like you said, it does not excuse anything that happened there, but let's see how we need to talk about the whole totality of the incidents. Michael Brown created and began that incident. Now, if we talk about...
So did the guy in North Charleston.
Yes. So let's talk about how can that be differed. You know, let's talk about that. These are the things that we need to talk about the forum. When we talk about open, honest dialogue, we have a problem in the community. Are we addressing the entire incidents? No. Have we ever asked? No forum will ever discuss why Darren Wilson was not indicted by the grand jury. Mm-hmm. If we just talk about that, mm-hmm. of how one of your best witnesses who is with Michael Brown made different statements to different news agencies while his attorney is standing beside him, is that a problem? Yes. Should that be addressed? Yes. Why should it be addressed? Because the next time we have an incident like that, then we can say, well, this young man will give a truthful, credible statement, and he would not jeopardize the justice that should have been brought forward. But we will not talk about that. We want to talk about the number of shots. We want to talk about the conflict. That's part of it. But let's talk about the whole thing. How do we better that next incident? Should Gentile, who testified in Trayvon Martin case, was she prepared to testify to that grand jury or to that jury? No. Why wasn't she prepared? I can't answer that. Ferguson. Did these incidents in Ferguson happen overnight? No. Where was the local organization that is there to support the African American community. They all surface now, but where is that happening when the lady getting the ticket? The people are having these problems. Who did they address? Who did they ring that bell for then? Why wasn't a forum held way before Michael Brown to say, we have a problem in Ferguson? Everybody that I heard in Ferguson says this problem has been going on, but nobody took time to address it. Well, that's what we're doing here.
There are so many issues here.
And the problem in Ferguson would not have cleared up had it not been for what happened in Ferguson and the fact that the Justice Department is now involved, correct?
Right. And the citizens of Ferguson didn't feel empowered to do anything.
Right.
I mean, you have, what, 3 black police officers in out of 63 in a town where the population is 67% African American. They felt as though they had no power. I think what we need to talk about is why communities feel like that disparate treatment is the issue. They are being treated, people of color are being treated differently. Why is that? Well, that's the chief complaint.
Here in Charlotte, the Observer reported on Sunday that though African Americans make up less than a third of the city's driving age residents, they are pulled over by police more frequently, receive more tickets, and are the subject of roadside searches twice as often as whites. According to that study by UNC Chapel Hill in Charlotte, black drivers account for almost 60% of the city's so-called vehicle equipment stops by police. Black men 50 and above here have a better chance, they say, of being searched during a traffic stop than white and black women in their lifetimes. And yet it's the 16 to 30 age that it gets pulled over the most. So does that say that we have a problem too? Maybe not as severe as Ferguson, but we have a problem?
I don't think it says we have a problem. If you look at those same statistics, who gets arrested more for DWIs or DUIs?
Tell me.
And that's those statistics would show that is the white community. So the numbers can, and we have studies like this. This is the same thing that I'm saying. It infuriates or fuels what is out there, but is that really what's out there with the numbers? Mm-hmm. If we say, what is our number one problem in the United States now? Most people say it would be the African-American being pulled over and shot by the police. I would say, and we'll always say, it is the violence that African American place upon other African Americans in the community. Have we addressed that? That is a conversation that we don't talk about. That is a conversation that we put to the side. And we always say that is not what we are talking about now. But that is something near and dear to my heart because I look at the numbers at that.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk about this book, How Not to Get Killed by the Police. And I want to talk about racial profiling, because maybe the targeting is not the word, but racial profiling perhaps is the word. And that's one of the things that the YWCA is working to end as well. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Park Sterling Bank, providing financial solutions for personal and business needs, such as turning a debit card on or off with the Park Sterling mobile app. Answers you can bank on. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And Opera Carolina, presenting Donizetti's Lucia de Lammermoor, April 16th and 19th in the Belk Theater. For more information, 704-372-1000 or operacarolina.org. Turkey expresses outrage after Pope Francis accuses the nation of committing the first genocide of the 20th century in the deaths of more than 1 million Armenians. On the Diane Rehm Show, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, they explore a new chapter in the century-old debate. And if you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
You spend your day, or part of it anyway, with your eyes glued to your computer or your phone. And really, you feel kind of hollow, don't you?
We feel that our emotions are missing from the digital world and our digital experiences. And at Affectiva, our vision is to bring that emotion into the equation.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Emotionally intelligent computers are closer than you'd think. The story next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Detective Gary McFadden from the Office of the Chief of Police, Kirsten Sickley, the CEO of the YWCA of Charlotte, and Quentin Williams with Butler Lappert Williams, and also the author of How Not to Get Killed by the Police. We were just talking off the air about the totality of some of these incidences that we don't talk. We talk about the most shocking aspect of what has happened in these incidents, and that is that the person being arrested or apprehended has been shot and killed by police. We don't talk about the overall topic. Explain that.
Well, I think that we need to talk about the whole incident to get a better picture of it. And I always go back to Michael Brown, because we need to talk about that. That's the catalyst of all the conversations. Let's have a conversation about Ferguson, dissect it. Did the police overreact on days after the Michael Brown shooting? Yes. Did anybody say, let's do this better next time? We're not going to talk about that. Michael Brown stole some things out of the store. Michael Brown assaulted the clerk. I always talk about it in the friends. What is his mindset at that point? After a person assaults somebody, steals something, then he walks down the middle of the yellow line and almost challenge anybody.
Yes, and you have the family defending, and I know they have lost a loved one, and they're in shock, and they're in mourning, but they're defending their child, which I guess is explainable on the one hand. On the other hand, it inflames the situation.
It does. But then let's talk about it. Let's be open about the whole incident, and how can we not go to that incident again? So then if we say, and so when we look at this forum thing, if Michael Brown and Darren Wilson was part of our forum, and this is what we're trying to create, Michael Brown and Darren Wilson was a part of yesterday's forum, and they are confronted on the street with the exact same circumstances of taking the cigarettes out of the store, pushing the clerk. But when Michael Brown and Darren Wilson came together, it would have been a different outcome if they had attended our Cops and Barber forum.
I think it's really all about developing respect. And we all know that there are citizens who will not be respectful. We know that there will be police officers who will not be respectful. But this forum creates a space for people to see each other as human beings and be less able to objectify them. And to get to know people, it's much harder to stereotype people when you've gotten to know them. So looking up at the panel and seeing young police officers from that North Tryon division listening to young people in the audience and mothers in the audience share their concerns, you can see, you can hear them say how it has changed their perception, because people are becoming human, not statistics.
You've written this book, Quentin, called How Not to Get Killed by the Police. I haven't read the book. Who's it aimed at?
The book was written so that people will be able to make it home safely. It's just one simple tool to handle a small aspect of a very complicated issue. So we see, as the detective was saying, in the Brown case, we would hope that under those circumstances, Michael Brown's still alive. And that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book really for my kids 3.5 years ago at the urging of my wife.
This is essentially the conversation that we have heard that African-American men, adults, men and women, have with their African-American boy children, male children, correct?
Exactly. I have a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I wanted to make sure, before we had these kids, wonderful children, I wanted to make sure that they knew what I know,
And what is that?
Which is, if you behave in a certain way when approached by law enforcement, the odds are of you leaving that situation intact are greater. And not saying that it's perfect, but the odds are greater of you getting home safely. So behaving with respect, cordiality, and humility allows you to have a heightened opportunity to get home safely.
Karina on Twitter says, what does respect mean? Human decency goes both ways. Respect is earned.
Exactly. Now, there are extreme officers. There are extreme people in the public citizenry. There are extreme people in a Ford plant who might not screw in a screw when they're supposed to screw in a screw, and that's all they do all day, 1,000 times a day. The difference is, if there's an extreme officer, that person has the ability to take your freedom away and maybe take your life.
So your book is aimed at young African American men and their parents, or not?
It's aimed at everybody.
Everybody, but does everybody need that advice? And this gets to racial profiling. If every African American parent is having this conversation, and not every white parent is having this conversation, there's a reason for that, isn't there?
My question is, why
are we not all having that conversation?
Correct. Why aren't we all having the conversation?
Do we all need to have that conversation?
Well, that's the question. That's what I'm looking for. Do we need it? I think that it should be a question. And I think that should be a forum of, why does African-American fathers believe that they need to have this conversation? And why does white fathers don't believe they need to have that conversation? Put those groups in the room and says, well, why do you think you need to tell your father, my kids, this? And why do you need to tell your son this?
Do you know the answer to that question?
I don't.
I do. I mean, it's obvious. The answer is because of our history. I have a friend who's a middle-aged, he's 55 years old, he's a banker. He fits the profile of what the American dream is, the way he lives. And he said to me after reading my book, my goodness, you know, this is amazing, because every time I'm stopped, I'm hustling to go through my glove compartment, I'm doing things without asking permission, I'm doing everything wrong. I learned something here. I learned that I should behave with more humility when I'm approached by a police officer. It's different for him than maybe another group.
Is it harder to do that if you have been raised in this country as an African American? We know the history of the country. We know about slavery. We know about Jim Crow. We know about resistance to civil rights acts. We know about how police officers all over the country, but particularly in the South in the 1950s and 60s and 40s, treated African-American people universally, but males particularly. Is it harder to act with respect? Doesn't your blood boil because you have to be extra careful?
Yes.
Yes.
I was arrested as an FBI agent because I was profiled. I was on vacation. I was profiled. I was arrested. I told them I was an FBI agent. I told them that I was out of state when the alleged incident happened a few hours earlier. I just arrived in Newport, Rhode Island, where I was arrested, and they didn't believe me. And I was an FBI agent. I had done everything right in my life up until that point, and I was in the back of a cruiser with handcuffs on. To say my blood was boiling is an understatement. But because I knew how to behave, I was able to get out of that situation and make it home safely.
The YWCA believes that all individuals have the right to justice and equal protection under the law, which includes the eradication of policies allowing for racial profiling. Even if Congress were to do what the YWCA wants it to do, and that would be to pass the End Racial Profiling Act, can individuals be controlled in how they think and how they act as a result of that? Can a police officer be trained to ignore their own ingrained prejudices?
I mean, I think that legislation is to set standards at federal, state, and local levels. But I think it takes leadership. It takes servant leadership. It takes thoughtful leadership like we have here in Charlotte with our police department to make things happen on a local, connected level where you're creating spaces where people are able to talk to each other, to learn about what their rights and responsibilities are, both as a citizen and as an officer, how to be accountable, how to be respectful. It is a shame and it is a tragedy that African American parents have to have these conversations with their children. But I would say we all need to be having these conversations with our children, because extreme officers are everywhere.
But having this conversation right now, my having this conversation with you, framing these questions, is as delicate as anything I've ever had to do, because I don't want to offend people. I don't want to be unfair. But the questions have to be asked. And having these conversations in an open forum has got to be equally delicate. How do you have these conversations honestly, no holds barred, without making people very angry?
We have to be honest with each other. We have a problem. Because you sit at this table with me and we are different colors and we have this 1 hour thing and you can say, well, she's my friend now. No, you're not. We have to have these long conversations. These forums that we have to be honest and real. Does the police department across the United States have the problem? Yes. Does the community as a whole have issues, especially the African-American community? Yes. Give me your 10. I give you my 10. Let's work on these. We're not going to do that. We're going to have the croissant dinners and brunches and feel good, and we're going to have nonviolent rallies, and we're going to have balloons, and we're going to have hot dogs. But is that effective? Mm-hmm. When I read part of his book, I can say that I was upset. I'm angry. I'm mad. I'm mad because of the title, because cops kill. But then I read part of the books. Some things I agree with. Some things I don't. Some of the language I agree with. Some of them I don't. But at the end of the day, I can accept him and work with him and deal with him because we're on the same path. And that's what I don't think we understand. Just because we don't agree on everything, that doesn't say we can't lay it down for a minute and say, let's work on the same path. And even though we're going in the same direction, we may not be in the same lane, but we're going to be in the same direction.
I know that you make a difference between, you see a difference between racial profiling and criminal profiling.
It's a difference.
Are you saying that there is no racial profiling, that it's all criminal profiling?
No.
Or there's two things going on here?
It is racial profiling. But can we distinguish and have we distinguished between racial profiling and criminal profiling? And do we always defend every single thing that happens to us, no matter what are the circumstances? We shouldn't. We should look at the whole totality of it. Because of a kid who's walking out the house at 3 o'clock in the morning, going to another house at 3 o'clock in the morning and spending 5 minutes and coming back for a period of 2 or 3 days. And when he sees the officer, he does a motion of throwing something down and taking off and running. Is that racial profiling because he's in that neighborhood, or that's criminal profiling? And I think we need to look at the difference, and everything is not harassment. And we should say that. Sure, there's harassment. Sure, there's problems. But let's look at it and be honest with it. And I think honesty, clarity, openness is the biggest thing that we have a problem with. Say we wrong when we wrong, and say, even though you're wrong, I'm going to help you get right.
Greg on Twitter says, yes, police unfairly profile. Policy issues dictate that. Financial crime is not prosecuted. Poor neighborhoods are targeted. Drug use is as high in Myers Park as it is in Greertown. Policy and implicit bias determines that little enforcement happens there.
Here's what happens. The majority of things that happen in some African-American communities are unreported. They just don't report it. Mm-hmm. Let it happen. Create it. As I have an analogy, you have a ceiling tile, and you see a spot in that ceiling today that you know water is dripping and it's not discolored. You're going to say, ignore it. Mm-hmm. Ignore it. About 2 months later, that ceiling tile is going to turn a different color.
Right.
Then that ceiling will start falling in. Then you want us to do something about it. In the same communities, report what you see. Tell us what you see. And if it caused us to arrest your nephew, is your community safe? Yes. Report what you see. We can't let it go on over and over and over. And then when it happens, now we want you to stop. The murders happen. The shootings happen every week in some neighborhoods. But only until that child who is asleep in the bed gets the bullet in their head, that now the community has an outcry.
Email from Daryl. I find it troubling that one of your guests would seem to imply that black men are targeted because they seem to bring attention to themselves. I would strongly disagree. Often police will use the pretext of stopping black men due to equipment malfunction. I've never been arrested. I was stopped several years ago for having a license plate light out. I'm an older black man with a young son. I have had the conversation with my son about how to interact with the police. Last point, there is no excuse for shooting an unarmed person running away from you who poses no danger to the public or to an officer. Just talk about that for 2 seconds. In North Charleston, what should that officer have done? Not fired the gun, right?
Correct.
Should he have shoot to maim, or should he not fired the gun at all?
We don't shoot to maim.
Okay. What should you do if you're confronted by a police officer who stops you for whatever reason, a potential traffic violation, walking down the street, whatever it is, what should you do? Quentin.
Remain humble, comply, and in every possible way, do whatever you can not to escalate that situation.
And if you think you're being unfairly targeted, or you have been mistreated, or you have been disrespected, what then?
In the book, I say, comply, comply, comply. Remain humble. And then you can take it up with that officer's superiors afterward.
These series of conversations continue. There's information about them at CMPD, and the next one's April 23rd at the YWCA. Information about that will be on our website at WFAE.org. Thank you to Kirsten Sickley, Detective Gary McFadden, and Quentin Williams for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information,